Check out our website at www.thefantasyamateurs.com.
On this edition of the Nasty Cast, we welcome Al Melchior of Fangraphs and FanRag Sports. He gives us his thoughts on the Matt Wieter signing, some closer situations, and the Mets' fifth starter job. We then preview first baseman for the 2017 fantasy baseball season.
Fantasy jousting?
Joe left me mid sashimi.
I got live breaking news.
There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. With hashtag Shark Week.
Did you actually balance your checkbook?
He hasn't had a chance to suck yet.
I want somebody with some chest hair I can grip onto.
What are his weapons?
Shut up and talk.
Those boards don't work on water.
I'm the destroyer of burritos.
Be sure to cut all that out, Jesse.
That's all we talk about on this podcast is interesting things.
This isn't a joke.
Eating ain't cheating.
Welcome to episode 106 of the Nasty Cast, fantasy baseball podcast brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken, and I am joined today not by Joe Osachi, the bald one, but rather by Manly Van Lee himself. Van, thanks for joining us again on the show.
That's right. I guess I'm a multi-time co-host or special guest here, so I feel very special in deep regards to the Nasty Cast now, and I'm more than happy to be a part of it and to continue being a part of it.
Okay, very good. Now shut up, because we have to introduce our very special guest. That's a man formerly of CBS, but now he's writing all over the place. FanRag Sports, FanGraphs, might have even seen MLB.com. It's Al Melchior. Welcome to the show.
Nate, thank you so much for having me. Been looking forward to this, and here we are. So thanks again for having me.
Yeah, it is our pleasure. I've been looking forward to speaking with you for some time now. And of course, we're practically brothers at this point, since we're both occupying the upper Midwest with fantasy baseball goodness.
Yeah, no, we definitely have. We just talked about this a little bit offline just before the show. And, I feel like we're part of the same region, but I'm so new here. I don't even know what to call it. So I think it's a little mountainous here to feel like the Midwest, but I'll take it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you've got a lot of mountains over there. Have you been to Glacier National Park yet?
You know what? I haven't, because Montana, it's a huge state. Mm-hmm. And we're down in the southwest corner of it here in Bozeman. So Glacier's at least a 5, maybe a 6 hour drive. So I haven't not yet made it up there. Drove through Yellowstone the other weekend, which was nice, but there's a lot of Montana to.
Yeah, it is gorgeous up there. I have I've had a lot of relatives and stuff in Montana, and they forced me to go up there, and there is some very treacherous and frightening roads, but the scenery overall is very nice.
So, oh, yeah. No, absolutely beautiful here.
Yeah. And I'm just going to assume that you own a ranch, like a 1,000-acre ranch, and you're dispensing cowboy advice to people on a daily basis?
If I am, I'm dispensing really bad cowboy advice to people. and it's funny, Van, that you say that, because I think you're about the third person to say that to me in like the past week, and no ranch yet. Hopefully in the future, at least a little bit of acreage, because we do have a horse. But no, we're living in town.
Well, you got a horse then. I mean, that's, you're 75% of the way there.
I think that's actually the easy part, but yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right.
We're working on it.
What's your horse's name?
His name is Jay.
Jay the horse. I like it.
Jay is a good horse.
It's not quite Vladimir Guerrero, which, Ben, that is your cat name, right?
Yes, and it's a girl cat. I might point that out as well.
Oh, very appropriate. Yeah, we recently got a cat, and I was going to name it Joe Meower, but I was afraid that it couldn't grow quite the sideburns that would be befitting. So
it would have great hair, though. Let's be honest there.
Certainly, and he does. It's very plush.
Could even be, you know, a shampoo endorsement in it for him, maybe.
Well, I'm all about endorsing things, you know, on the show. So maybe I'm going to sell some blue. Got it mentioned on the show last week with Jessica Kleinschmidt. So maybe I'm going to ring the doorbell on their establishment and see where that takes me. Can never get too much of the, you know, the sponsorship dollars.
No, absolutely. Just show yourself out as much as you humanly can.
Absolutely. Speaking,
Justin's going to be on my show next week, so I think I need to make a phone call as well.
There you go. Okay. Well, let's see. Speaking of all this plugging of everything, buy a T-shirt at thefantasyamateurs.com. Hey, that's a good idea. We'll send you some free pretzels with that too, because guess what? We're sponsored by Dots Pretzels.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
We will also give you some free pretzels if you rate and review the podcast. We'll ship them right out to you. Let's see what else. So you can email us, thefantasyamateurs@gmail.com, if you have anything to say. And most importantly, if you want into the 2017 NastyCast Podcast League, which is filling, but we are still taking entries for that. So just give us an email there. And, of course, if you could take a minute to rate and review the podcast, that'll ensure you some free pretzels and entrance into the Podcast League. You can also follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Amateurs. And, of course, Van is at Manly Van Lee. So, with that out of the way, I think we've got a lot to get to, so we're going to get into some news.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
And we're going to start off with Matt Wieters, who has signed a 2-year, I believe it was $21 million contract with the Nationals, pushing Derek Norris to the bench, presumably. What do you think, Al? What is the fantasy fallout here?
Yep, to the bench or to some other team, although I'm not sure other than the White Sox, and I don't see them giving up anything of you know, real value, I would think, to get Norris, because I don't see how he would really afford their long-term plans that much. So I'm not sure where Norris would go. So, yeah, I suppose probably a part-time role. And, you know, the thing is, for me, I'm not that worried about the impact, because Norris is pretty far down in my catcher rankings. And so he's somebody I'm really on kind of the fence about, even in a two-catcher league. So this certainly, at least for the time being, I think it's going to maybe push him just clear out of any kind of two-catcher league consideration for a standard mixed league.
So where do you have Matt Wieters ranked now amongst your catchers with his, you know, it's a pretty favorable lineup there, if not a ballpark. So are you moving him up or down from last year?
Down a little bit. I've got him 14th. So right between Yadier Molina and Wilson Ramos. And I pretty much built in the fact that I thought he would find a full-time job somewhere when I last updated these rankings. So I don't really see moving him up or down from there. But last year, I think I probably had him in the neighborhood of 10th, give or take maybe a spot. So, you know, last year just was, you know, not as robust a comeback as I had hoped for Wieters. And I think the position's gotten a little bit better with, you know, Contreras joining the mix and Grandal breaking out last year. I really like Mike Zunino. I've actually got Mike Zunino ahead of Wieters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I love the power. I mean, he's got to hit over 210 or 220 to earn that, but I think he's got a shot at it. I think he could be kind of a Brian McCann type of catcher, where he gives you that 20-25 homer power with an average that's not going to totally kill you. So certainly have him, you know, ranked well behind McCann and Sal Perez and you know, more established catchers in that mold. But the power potential that Zunino has is yeah, I think just about unparalleled, with you know, the possible exception of Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, and you know, the catcher position, kind of the MO this year is low batting average, lots of power. There are just a lot of guys that kind of fit that mold. Zunino does as well, but as compared to Grandal, I think he does have more power, so I think the upside's significantly higher. I don't know if he really can hit for even the average that Grandal did, but time will tell.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Risky for sure, because of the batting average and all those strikeouts, but took a step forward last year, and I'm hopeful that he'll improve that part of his game in 2017.
Yeah, I like Wieters better than I. Well, it seems like all of you at this point. I put him at 8th in my rankings.
Too. Get that out there. Yeah.
Okay. You know, at 265 BABIP last year, despite a 33% hard contact rate and a 24% line drive rate, seems pretty darn unlucky. You know, so obviously, worst ballpark, but I think that'll even out a little bit. You know, as far as like you said, out with Yadier Molina, I think they could end up perhaps. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't say that Wieters could necessarily hit 300 like a Molina could, but I think the difference for me would be, you know, the power that you're going to get, you know, with Wieters. So I would prefer him there. And like I said, I have him up at 8. So I think this is a pretty good landing spot for him. Depending on where he goes in drafts, I think I might end up even owning a share or two of him this year because I seem to be high on him compared to the general consensus.
Go ahead.
No, and I was just going to say that you've mentioned the ballpark a couple of times, and his power splits really are not too bad. I mean, lower ISO career on the road away from Camden Yards, but, you know, the home run power is really carried over. Now, granted, probably a lot of that is from the other AL East parks. But, yeah, it's not like somebody who just fattened up playing in home games.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that is a fair point. Van, did you have something you wanted to add before we move on?
Yeah, with Wieters, he kind of has a bit of that Justin Upton mystique around him of this guy was supposed to be the top catcher in the world for 40 years or whatever, but he never quite lived up to it. But he's always been very good for the most part. So I think there's a little bit of a lot of people looking at him and saying, well, he wasn't, you know, the top pick, so I don't think he's really that good. But he's actually put on some really good seasons and solid numbers.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm still a little bit of a fan. I definitely think that he's sort of reached his ceiling, though. You know, at this point, it's hard to project another level for him. But we're going to move on to some more potentially devastating news. Zach Britt has suffered an oblique strain. It's unsure at this point exactly how long it'll keep him out. But Al, if he is forced to miss time heading into the season, who do you think is first in line for saves?
Ooh, that's a tough one in that bullpen. I just really have to go on a hunch here and say probably Michael Givens. I think he'd be a good one in the short term.
He is the sexy one.
Yeah. But, you know, again, I mean, these injuries, you know, oblique injuries, I mean, at this point, it's really just a precautionary thing that they're holding him out from an intra-squad game, holding Britton out. So hopefully that just prevents the issue altogether. But yeah, if we're looking at a situation where it lingers and Britton maybe is a little late to start the season, I don't know that I would draft whoever it was, but certainly, I think Givens is certainly the one I would want to see get the job. And I think he's got a good shot at it if that were the case.
Interesting. So Van, do you have any dark horse or, I guess also actually answer this question first. Why don't you, is he the number one closer off the board this year? Or, if not, where are you drafting him among closers?
Britton? No, he's definitely not the number one closer. I don't think that's at all a smart idea simply because he doesn't have the strikeout rate.
But Van, he was in Cy Young talk last year.
Whatever. Yeah, no, thank you. I wouldn't mind owning Britton, don't get me wrong, but he's just not that elite tier. He's a really good pitcher, and he's going to succeed for the most part, particularly if he's healthy. If he's not healthy, you know, that's something to watch. But no, thank you. I'd rather have Jansen. I'd rather have Chapman, you know, guys like that who are going to be a little better. Honestly, I kind of compare him a bit to Mark Melancon, simply that it's a guy who's succeeded, but again, doesn't really strike pitchers out.
Yeah, I think despite how good he was last year, I would I'd be more inclined to take, you know, a strikeout guy, even like Sung Hwan Oh, who's going behind him, and Edwin Diaz, who, Van, you brought up even before we were talking with Al here. Big fan of Edwin Diaz. So, but Brad Brock, as far as another name to consider perhaps in that bullpen, but, you know, we're a ways off, so we won't spend too much time speculating. We'll just hope for the best there, but Van, I think we're going to start with you on this one. Zach Wheeler is still having trouble with his pitching arm. He threw a bullpen session recently, but it's pretty disconcerting at this point that he's still having issues with that arm after, I mean, really just being shut down time after time. So do you think Wheeler still has the leg up on that fifth starter gig? And for the Mets? And if not, who do you have?
I definitely don't think he has the leg up, as you say. I'm pretty disconcerted with Wheeler. I really liked him. I thought he was a great talent, followed his career. I had him in a lot of fantasy leagues. I was all in. And then, of course, the Tommy John surgery happened, which in and of itself isn't that big of a deal to an extent. But then, you know, again, he didn't pitch last year. He really is having a lot of these troubles, more trouble with his pitching elbow. I have no interest in following him at this point. I think the risk is too heavy. Maybe somebody out there can get a benefit from him, but I don't know. I'm not going to own him on any of my teams, and it's a sad day for the Mets in that regard as well. As far as the fifth starter spot, you know, I don't know. I honestly don't even really think a whole lot about some of these until we get at least a few of the spring games under our belt, just to see where the Mets are plugging people in or where they're giving, okay, so this guy got the first start, so maybe they're leaning his way. So I honestly have no idea which way that's going to go. I just don't think it's going to go the way of Zach Wheeler.
All right. What do you think, Al? Any sleepers for that fifth starter gig?
I mean, Gesellman seems to be the one who is getting the most attention in our industry. I don't have any real strong preference of whether it's him or Seth Lugo. To me, they're both sort of low-end guys for mixed leagues, but that said, mixed league relevant just in a low-end sort of way. And I certainly would have more than I would Wheeler at this point. But I will say that if you want to take the flyer that in NFBC ADP, Wheeler is going 114th right now among starting pitchers. So it would be certainly a low-risk move, but one that's real high on my priority list, to be honest.
Yeah.
A high risk, low risk move.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't have any faith in Wheeler at this point, as sad as it is. I think they would be wise to just put him in the pen, at least from the onset, just to see what they have there, try to keep him healthy. And I do like Gesellman for that fifth starter gig. I actually like him quite a bit. Close to a strikeout in inning last year, 2.42 ERA, and he really has shown a talent for keeping the ball in the park. 3.6 home run per fly ball last year, but also throughout his minor league career, he's really been good at limiting home runs, and I think that combined with some nice velocity that has ticked up recently for him, I really think that. With that in his command, that he could, not necessarily be like a DeGrom 2.0, but I do think that he's going to be a guy that I'm going to be targeting in just about all of my leagues at his price point. I'm really interested in him. Plus, he's got sweet
hair.
I'm
sorry, Nate. You know what I hadn't really thought of before was you mentioned that last year and fairly limited innings, 44 and two-thirds, that he was close to a strikeout per inning. And yet he was really not at all a strikeout guy throughout his minor league career. That seems to be a pattern with the Mets pitchers that they bring up. It was true with Harvey. Now, Harvey was a good strikeout pitcher, but became a better one when he came to the majors. DeGrom, not really a great strikeout pitcher in the minors, became a very good one in the majors. I don't remember what the trend was with Wheeler exactly, but I just wonder what's up with that.
You think it's the worst pitch slider?
Coach.
That's a great theory and one that makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, we saw DeGrom sort of come out of nowhere, and that slider has helped everybody, and he threw it just about 20% of the time last year. Swinging strike rate, 9.1%. So perhaps the K per inning is a bit deceiving, but, I do think that, he could, even if he's closer to 8 strikeouts per 9, it's still better than league average. And I think he can put really nice ratios. And still, even if he doesn't have a K per inning, be really nice for the price this year. But with that, we're going to move on to the Dodgers signing Franklin Gutierrez. Al, any interest in Franklin Gutierrez?
Well, if I play DFS this year, definitely. Because I love what he does against lefties. And he's somebody that would be kind of an interesting guy to stream in a lefty heavy week on the Dodgers schedule. I mean, I really have liked Gutierrez the last couple of seasons, as that sort of, in the Ryan Rayburn mold of if the team actually faces a bunch of lefties, somebody that might be an upgrade over, an outfielder that's in your lineup. But it really doesn't go any farther than that. Or you know, maybe NL only, draft him outright in an NL only league. But he can't play every day. So that really limits his value.
Agreed. So, Van, I can't imagine you have anything more to add on Franklin Gutierrez. So I'm going to move us on to the Washington Saves mix. We've got supposedly an open competition between Kelly Trainin and Glover. So do you have any sort of inkling or any aspirations for who might save games there?
Well,
I'm sorry.
On your list, Nate, of our going over topics and so forth, you put Kelly, Trainin, Glover all in the mix for saves in Washington. Who wins? I still think it's David Robertson. Ultimately, in the long run, I think they're going to make a deal for him. And now that they've signed Wieters, I didn't mention this earlier, but that makes Lobatone as the more trade chip. Obviously, that's not going to net you Robertson, but I still think something comes together. If that doesn't happen, I think clearly the best pitcher on that staff is Sean Kelly. I think he gets the job. Health permitting, I think he keeps it.
Always got to be the contrarian, don't you? I give you three options and you pick number four. Jeez. This is what I deal with, Al. What do you think, though, Al?
I'll color within the lines here.
Thank you.
I want Kelly to win the job. I'm not really sure he will. And not even if we just take David Robertson out of the picture, I'm not sure that Kelly wins the job. And sort of, you know, like we talked about, Franklin Gutierrez, because of health issues, can't play every day. I know there's concerns about durability with Sean Kelly. And I could see a situation where maybe he or Trainin starts out in the role, but Glover gets it in fairly short time. This is a situation I don't love because I really have no idea who's going to get it. I think whoever I pick probably won't be them, but I certainly hope it's Kelly because he's, you know, unlike Glover, who put up really nice numbers in the minors, but very limited track record in the majors and not a very impressive one. And then, you know, trained and not kind of a stereotypical closer profile with his ratios. So Kelly seems like the guy, but again, because of the concerns of his durability, I really have some doubts about him winning it outright.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be pissed if Kelly doesn't get the job out of spring training just because he did so well in relief last year. And he just seems like sort of the clear-cut option as far as I'm concerned. You know, and you got a guy, too, that's under a set contract. And, you know, we saw how the whole saves paying and arbitration thing just worked out in New York. There's a lot of ruckus about that, and so I sort of feel like from a cost control standpoint, it always behooves the team to, you know, go with the set guy in Kelly. And I mean, his numbers that he posted last year were just awesome. You know, 12.41 K per nine, 171 walks per nine, sub 3 ERA. There's nothing to see there as far as I'm concerned. Like you said, the only problem really I think for Kelly that you have to worry about is the track record of health. So after that, I think I would be interested in training. But actually, Kelly, as far as a late guy, I think I would be interested in him. But, you know, I don't disagree with the notion that David Robertson will eventually be on the team and Kelly will be out of a job. So he is pretty risky. But with that, we shall move into our segment entitled ADP Wars. All right, and how this works, we take two similarly grouped players at the same position in ADP, according to Fantasy Pros, their composite rankings, and pit them against each other, and basically, in a vacuum, Al, see who you would prefer. So we're going to start off with Will Myers versus Jose Abreu. Myers' ADP is 56.7, and Abreu's is right after him at 61.3. So between these two, who are you going to draft?
You're forcing me to pick one. I'll be really surprised if I wind up with either one on any roster that I have because I don't like the value in terms of their ADPs as it is right now. But you're making me pick. I'll take Jose Abreu.
Thank you for coloring between the lines once again.
I'm picking between Myers and Abreu, so I'll take Matt Carpenter. Thank you. No,
come on.
I'll take Abreu over Myers because I'm just very, very skeptical of what he did. And it wasn't even the first half. He really started to slow down even before the All-Star break. So 2.5, 3 months, somewhere in that range, was really tearing it up. And Abreu, I mean, he's been very inconsistent and kind of all over the map. I don't really know which version to expect from him. I do think he'll probably be better this year than last year. And he did finish strong, but there's a narrower range of possibilities I see with Abreu, as inconsistent as he has been, as compared to Myers, where, okay, maybe who he was in the first half, maybe that's who he is, maybe that's who he can be. But if he's the guy he was in the second half or for much of his career prior to last year, that is not somebody I want to be spending a top 50, 60 pick on.
Fair enough. Van, what do you say?
Well, first and foremost, I think that you should have a segment called ADP Wars, where ADP stands for all Dakota players, and you just debate the merits of Dakota-born players, which I don't even know if there are any. But I think that's
your segment. Travis Hafner, exactly. Thank you, Al. Darren Erstedt.
There you go.
Darren Erstedt from Jamestown, I believe.
Oh, okay. You captured my attention, because Darren Erstedt holds a special part in my heart. But, okay, getting back to it, I think Will Myers and Abreu, between the two, it's going to depend on your team construction. I think Will Myers has the upside because you can get the stolen bases. He's going to have decent power, but he also has more risk. I think Abreu is going to hit for power, and there you go. That's that. Of the two, if I'm going to take one, I'm going to take Abreu. But I'm not confident that, like Al said, I would have either of these guys on my team.
Oh, but Myers has said that he's going to go 40-40 this year.
Great. How'd that work for Matt Kemp?
I think he got fat and had surgery, or maybe in a reverse order of that. But I don't have too much to add to that. I agree. If I somehow have gone through the first four rounds of the draft and I don't have any steals, then I'm going to feel pretty hamstrung, and I'm probably going to be forced to go with Myers. But he's only had two seasons where he's played over 135 games since he was drafted. You know, that goes back to the minors too. So he's just a guy who's always been injury prone. An 18.7% home run for fly ball is going to be hard to repeat with a 33% hard contact rate and just a 38% pull rate. So the steals are nice, but there's a lot of risk there. And Jose Abreu, even in a down year, he's going to hit for good average and drive in 100. So just rock solid for his price there. I agree. So our next one then, moving on, will be Chris Davis, whose ADP is 76, and he will go against Hanley Ramirez, a scant one pick after him at pick 77. So Van, we will start with you here. I know you have a long-standing love affair with Hanley Ramirez, but can Chris Davis unseat him?
Love affair, yeah, that's exactly what it is. No, I'm going Chris Davis all the way. I don't trust at all what Hanley did last year. I think it's rooted in some truth in that, yeah, he does still have power. Yeah, he can steal a little bit, but I don't think he's going to repeat that line, which was 286, 361, 505. No one has ever said that his bat would really play up at first base. It did last year. I think he kind of reverts a bit and is still okay, but not great. Whereas Davis, I mean, you can just pencil in a ton of homers. He's not going to hit for average, but if you're in an OBP league, that's all the better, because he's still going to walk a lot and give you a decent OBP too.
Yes, well, I'm gonna disagree with you, because I actually like Hanley this year.
Yeah, of course you do. You traded him in our league, didn't you?
I traded him away, yeah, for Kenley Jansen and Donnie DeWeese, who I'm sure is going to grow up and be a big boy and probably be a fifth outfielder somewhere. But anyway, Hanley Ramirez, 37% hard contact rate last year, second highest mark of his career. He's back, baby. I think a lot of 2016 or 2015 was injury. You know, after he ran into that wall, he was just crap after that the whole rest of the season. So I think, like you said, playing DH in first base, I don't necessarily buy into the fact that it'll play up his bat, but it'll keep him healthy enough to stay on the field and keep producing. And I think the buffer of that sweet, sweet Red Sox lineup is going to give him 100-100 potential for runs and RBIs. If you're looking at sort of some chinks in the armor, his contact rate did dip below 78%, the lowest of his career. And his zone contact fell for the fourth consecutive year, so I wonder if that bat speed might be fading a little bit at age 33. But I would still rather have him than Chris Davis, who could very well hit 220. Yeah, he could probably give you some more power, but that batting average just scares the crap out of me. So, Al, it's up to you to break the tie.
All right, I'm going to side with Van on this one. Sorry,
Boo! Matt.
And for many of the same reasons, just the patterns of inconsistency. I've just been burned by Hanley way too many times before. And, yeah, there is the coincidence of him being really bad after the shoulder injury. But he's had these kind of these sine waves of his career where, you know, he had that shortened year with the Dodgers where he just hit like nobody's business, and then, you know, the following season dropped way off, and I have seen this movie with him too many times. So it's, you know, similar in a way to what I was saying about Will Myers. It's not that I completely write off the possibility that he Hanley could be like he was for the latter part of last season, but I could just as easily see him, you know, repeating something closer to 2015. Chris Davis, also very inconsistent. That's what makes these ADP wars fun, right? Because you get these guys that you don't necessarily know what you're getting. But I feel like the inconsistency with him is a little bit misleading. If you look at the results, like you said, the 221 average last year, very scary. I don't think he's going to repeat that. I think he'll do much better this year because the batted ball data, to me, he looks like very much the same hitter he was in 2015, with the very notable exception of a much lower line drive rate, batted ball data point from year to year. That can fluctuate a lot for no particular reason. So I think he's just due for some kind of random upward regression. And he didn't really lose any home run power, but with the lower BABIP, he lost some doubles. I think the doubles will be back. I think the batting average will surface up more towards 250. And I think that'll be enough for him to outproduce produce Hanley.
You both will rue the day. all right, fine. We'll move on to our last ADP wars here. And that's going to be Adrian Gonzalez at 153 as we shoot down the board quite a bit for this one. He's going to take on Kendrys Morales at 155. So I shall start us off with this one. And I am going to go with Kendrys Morales here. Before I actually looked into these two guys, I thought it was going to be a lot closer than it was. But it kind of helps that Gonzalez is a little nicked up right now. I believe he's got an elbow injury that he's sort of nursing. So we'll see. His draft stock might really plummet if he can't get healthy. But for Gonzalez, 46% ground ball rate shot way up last year. Hard contact was down, led to just 18 home runs. The batting average and lineup should save his value to a certain extent, but the power is going to disappoint. So I'm going Kendrys Morales all the way here. Career high 41% hard contact last year, led to a 19% home run per fly ball. And pretty nice lineup there too in Toronto. So Al, what do you say?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with Kendrys. And actually the rankings that I have online right now with both FanGraphs and FanRag, I do have Gonzalez ahead, but sort of like you were saying with the elbow injury, that if you wanted an excuse to downgrade Gonzalez, you now have your excuse. And I kind of look back at that and wonder, why did I even have him ahead of Kendrys in the first place? But now with the very real possibility that Gonzalez could miss some time early on, and you know, maybe this could be potentially an injury that hampers his production, we don't know, but it's enough of a question mark that I like Morales, especially now finally getting to hit in a good power environment in Toronto in a good lineup. I agree. He's got.
All right, Van, what say you?
I'm going to make it a clean sweep. I'm going to go with Kendrys Morales on this one.
Easy one.
Looks Gonzalez dropped about 45 points off of his slugging percentage last year. To downplay the elbow injury this year, he's listed as tendonitis, which for first baseman isn't as big of a deal as it could be others. Who knows what that's going to be? But even if they were both healthy, I'll take the upside of Morales, particularly at this point in the draft. I'm not really looking for just solid, steady production. I want someone who's going to, you know, give me more value than what I'm taking. And I think of these two guys, Morales is the only one that's really going to do that.
Very well. All right, we're going to take a quick break and come right back.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pizzapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
Target acquired.
All right, we have returned, and we're going to look at some guys that make our hearts leap, keep us awake at night, as we think about the sexy time that we shall have as we draft these guys onto our team. Al, we're going to start with you. What first baseman are you targeting this year in drafts?
Well, I mean, if you're going to make me pick one, and it kind of sounds like you are.
I am. I'd
like Joey Votto. Now, I mean, it's very dependent on draft position. And, you know, if I've got the fifth or sixth pick and Paul Goldschmidt's there, I'm probably taking him. In fact, I'm almost certainly taking him. But, you know, otherwise, yeah, I'm probably going to try to come back around the second round, get Votto. And just in terms of what he brings to the table, you know, unless it's early in the second round, Rizzo and Miggy may not even be there. I do have them ranked ahead of Votto. But I think Votto's got the better chance to slide further down in the draft. And there's really not much separating him from Rizzo and Cabrera other than maybe just a little bit less consistency. But, you know, really, I'd be super happy with any of the top six, Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Cabrera, Votto, Encarnacion, or Freeman. I think if those first five are off the board, but Freeman's there, I'm going to be a little reticent to take him just because I'm not sure I trust the roughly half season or so of a breakout that he had last year. But he's still, I just prefer Freeman so much more than anybody that I see below the, you know, kind of the cliff dive into the second tier. That, you know, I'd be happy with any one of those six. But of the six, if you make me pick one, it's Votto.
Yeah, so it sounds like in your drafts, you're pretty much going to get, you're going to try to get one of those really elite first basemen early on.
Yeah, no, that's probably my biggest goal. And a very close second is to get one of the top six or seven outfielders, because I think there's a big drop off after that as well. But yeah, that's a big, big goal for me.
Interesting. All right. Yeah, I have yet to really dive into outfield too deeply, so I can't really speak to that yet. But what about you, Van? Who are you targeting at first base this year?
Well, I'll make a couple of points here. I think, and this may be just a product of the type of leagues that I'm seeing, but I think Goldschmidt is going later than he really should be. And that's not saying he's going really late. But if he's going in the 10th position, for example, I think that's too low. I still think he's one of the top four or five players in baseball. So I like Goldschmidt there. I will counter Al's point to Freddie Freeman. I'm all in. I think he's really good. He's coming in on his age 26 or 27 season. He's always been able to walk and had a good amount of discipline and a good eye. So I really like Freddie Freeman, too. I actually kind of bump him up a little bit more than other people. And then lastly, if I'm past the elite tier of guys, I'm just going to wait and take Brandon Belt. I think this is a guy that if you've watched anything I've done, you'll get consistency here. And then I'm a huge fan of Brandon Belt because he's not your traditional first base guy. He's not power first or anything. He's extreme OBP, hits a lot of doubles, just overall a good player. And he's solid. And he showed help. He was healthy last year, too.
Which is a shocker.
Yeah,
it does happen to the baby giraffe once in a while. Actually, one of my targets this year, I think, especially given the comments that you guys have said, I think Hanley Ramirez is going to find his way onto a lot of my teams. I have him a few spots higher than the consensus. But another guy that we haven't talked about yet, Ian Desmond, I just love the move to Colorado. I wrote about him at Fantastics the other day. Go check that out if you haven't yet. You can find it, the blog link from my Twitter account. But anyway, I mean, he cut his strikeout rate last year, which coming into last year was really the big concern for me. He shaved a ton of points off of that strikeout rate, and he ended up chasing a lot fewer pitches, and that helped a lot in that regard. And even, you know, I think that his batting average going to Coors is going to rival a lot of these other elite hitters. I think he could, you know, he could push 290, maybe even 300, with playing half his games at Coors, which I think with the 2020 potential that he has a very good chance to reach in a great lineup. I love me some Ian Desmond so far this year. But let's flip to the negative side and crap on some of these guys. We're going to look at some guys we're going to avoid. All right, Al, we will start with you again. Who are you avoiding at the first base position this year?
Well, you know, we've talked about some of these guys. You in the ADP wars, you made me choose between Jose Abreu and Will Myers.
Such a terrible person. I'm making you do so many things you don't want to do.
You're just doing your job, so yeah, I understand. but I really would like to avoid both of them. And Hanley, too, just because of so much uncertainty. They're pretty high up on my list in terms of players to avoid. But really, kind of, other than Desmond, who you mentioned, I really, in terms of the second-tier guys, I like Desmond a lot. I like Chris Davis a lot, who I talked about a little bit earlier in the show. And outside of them, really, I could wait a long, long way till late, you know, for somebody like Belt. And I'll tell you, somebody I like even better than Belt is Mike Napoli. He's going super late so far. And I think what he did last season with Cleveland was absolutely legit. And I think he's very undervalued. So I would probably avoid that whole second tier, unless I just was really looking at the other positions in the queue and really hating what I was seeing.
All right. Van, what about you? Are you going to talk more crap about Henry Ramirez?
I am, yes.
Come on! I'm ending this call.
My list of avoids is probably your list of targets, because I have Henry Ramirez and Ian Desmond both on there.
Oh, no.
I'm not necessarily against Desmond, per se. I just think he's more second half last year than he was first half last year, and I think the price is going to be far too high. I know he's in Coors, blah, blah, blah. I'm just not that interested. Hanley, again, last year was the first year he was really healthy in a while. We've already ragged on him. That's about the extent of that. And then the last name I wanted to throw out there for me was Eric Hosmer. I have no interest in Eric Hosmer. I know he's coming into his prime, but this is a first baseman who slugged .433 last year. He had a .761 OPS, which was pretty good, but thanks to the on-base percentage. And I don't know. He has to get 600-plus plate appearances to have, you know, 20-plus homers, and I just don't think that's going to happen anymore.
Oh, my God. We're going to have to place some bets on these first basemen when we get to it, man. This is ridiculous. Lunacy, I tell you. But I do echo your statements on Eric Hosmer, at least. He made my avoid list for the show. I'm going to pick 107. You know, when I was writing his name earlier, I mistyped it. I forgot the M, so it was Hoser, which I think is apt as far as describing what I think of him. He's take off your hoser.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
New nickname.
Well, we are in South Canada here in North Dakota, so I've perfected. I mean, people listen to the show and they think that we're Canadian. Me and Joe, but anyway, yeah, he almost 60% ground ball rate last year, 58.9% ground ball rate, highest of his career. He needed a 24% home run per fly ball to get to his 25 home runs last year. Doesn't steal much. A lot of batting average variance. There's just nothing that I really like about Hosmer. They're going to be selling a lot of pieces of that team as the season goes along as well, so I don't see that lineup being a plus. And the other guy that I will list, it's just a pure injury and old age thing. That's Albert Pujols. Sorry, I realize that's one of your Angels, man. But he just scares me. You know, I don't know how much time he's going to miss. He's not necessarily going to be healthy by opening day, and just guys that are injured already coming into the season, especially old ones who have had injuries in the past like him, I just tend to stay away because there's just so many nice options at the position that I feel pretty good with just avoiding him.
He's also 47. Don't listen to what it says on Baseball Reference or whatever. He's 47.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's definitely an argument against him.
Yeah, and I could have easily mentioned Hosmer as well. You know, I mean, I kind of lump a lot of these guys, including Pujols, in with the second tier. But here's something I don't much like for Hosmer. 2014, this is based on from Fangraphs data, 83.3% contact rate. And then that went to 80.7, and last year 75.4. So we're getting a little bit more power from him, but It definitely seems to be coming with a price.
Well, and he's not even making tremendous contact either, as he's, like you said, sort of selling out for power. If you're hitting all the balls into the ground, no wonder his batting average took a nosedive last year.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that's going to change. He's been a ground ball hitter his whole career.
Yeah, oh, but
the Royals are ready to lock that down.
I was going
to
say, he's going to get a 10-year deal now, apparently. We'll see about that. Good luck, you hoser. With that, we're going to take a quick break, and yeah, we'll come back. See you.
There's gold in them die hills.
All right, we have returned on the nastiest of casts, and this is going to be our final segment here. We're going to do some mining. We're going to dig deep for some potential impact prospects or deep league sleepers. And so, Al, once again, as our guest of honor, who are you targeting in deep leagues?
Well, yeah, not so much prospects, because I don't think there's really impact ones for this year, although we'll drop a name in a bit. But I mentioned before, this is not so much deep league, but Mike Napoli is going really late. So in terms of mixed leagues, that's somebody that I think I can wait on a long time. But in terms of a format that's a little bit deeper, I like Justin Bour. I think that there's some nice power potential there. And, hopefully he stays healthy this year. He walked a bunch last year. So I think he's a little bit unheralded.
I like him too, although I am a little concerned that apparently he's not going to platoon this year.
Ooh, I don't like
that. Yeah, that's kind of a mixed blessing, right? Because if he does better against lefties, that's going to really hurt his ratios and probably not help his counting stats in a proportionate way.
That's it. Yeah, that's my concern. When I heard that, I just sort of took that as a net negative. I looked it up. His 252 is his career weighted on base against lefties. Just terrible. So I think it's a bad idea to not platoon him. So hopefully he,
Yeah, they could easily change course on that too.
Yeah,
so.
Hopefully somebody beats some sense into him on that one. But
If I have to mention one prospect, I don't think he has a great shot at playing time this year, but Cody Bellinger, I certainly hope finds a way. And whether it's, not that I'm wishing bad things for Adrian Gonzalez, but if this injury is a nagging one for Gonzalez, then that could pave the way for Bellinger for an earlier call-up. But he also could play some outfield, and I know that the Dodgers have a cast of thousands buying for those outfield spots. But really, other than Jock Peterson, I don't think there's tremendous roadblocks to somebody like a Bellinger coming up mid-season and possibly getting some playing time. So the potential there for some really nice power in OBP in terms of potential impact prospects, Bellinger might be my favorite.
Right on. Van, what about you?
I'm going to give you two names, and I'm going to preface this with saying that I'm not particularly really enamored with them, but you want bleepers, so that's what I'm going to give you. And the two for me are Tommy Joseph, who, again, has insane power potential, but doesn't really put a lot of contact on the ball, doesn't walk at all. But I don't know, I feel like he could do an Adam Duvall of last year as upside. And then Eric Thames, or is it Thames, like Marcus Thames, or is it Thames?
I think it's just Thames, isn't it?
I prefer Thames. I'm going to go with that. So Eric Thames. okay. Yeah, I'm not really that interested in him, to be honest, but he's got a full-time job, and he mashed in Korea. Now, the one difference between, well, one of the many differences between Korea and here is if he can catch up to it, he might actually have an easier time in that regard. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be easier, but there's some potential there. So those are my deep guys that I might kind of take a peek at if I need somebody to fill out a roster and just to see if I can strike gold.
Yeah, I think a lot of the projections might be a little pessimistic as far as his stolen base ability. Now, granted, it's a lot easier to steal in KBO than it is to steal in Major League Baseball, but the Brewers last year I don't have the number in front of me, but they stole like 50 more bases than anybody else. Like even the Reds, I think, were the second team, like they just stole so many bases. So last year. Mm-hmm. So I think that, he's looking at perhaps 15 to 20, depending on, his stolen base acumen. But, I think that's gotten a little bit underreported, although he's a little bit risky, but yeah, that's why he's so late. Right.
There you go.
So I've got, who do I have here? Two guys. Yes.
Of course, I've got to pimp my boy Swaggy V, Dan Vogelbach, out in Seattle. He's going at pick 381 right now, even after Cody Bellinger, Al, who doesn't even have a job
yet. That's incredible. That, right? And that shouldn't be the case, because he's actually got a job.
Exactly. He's always been sort of my binky, so he's just a big, squishy hitting machine. Just a beefcake of a dude that I hope is very successful this year, or else I'm going to feel pretty stupid. But it sounds like they're going to platoon him. He's going to sit against lefties, and why wouldn't you when you have Danny Valencia that you can platoon with? So they'll sort of ease him in, you know, gently. But he didn't have really bad platoon splits against lefties in the minors. At AAA, you know, granted it was PCL, and I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I think he is an 800 and some, maybe 850 OPS against lefties. So he's far from hapless against left-handed pitching. So we'll see. Hopefully he succeeds, and they'll even stop platooning him.
And his name, to be honest, sounds like he should be like the bassist for Steely Dan.
Maybe
that's
he
just
is.
What it sounds like to me. He could be. Who knows? I don't even know anything about Steely Dan. I just know they existed.
Steely Dan Vogelbach. I think we just created a nickname.
That's two for two tonight. Nice.
Well done. You brought your A game.
Maybe I'll name a team Straily Dan Vogelbach this year.
Ooh, nice. That's good.
You got the double. Two for one in there.
I think I have to draft them both, but
it does. Might be worth it. Hey, they're cheap enough. You can do it. They won't kill you. And then the last guy I'll mention, Steve Pierce. He's going right at the same area as Vogelbach right now, 375 overall, according to Fantasy Pros ADP. You know, granted, he rarely plays more than 100 games. But even if, you know, at this point, especially if you're in an AL-only league, if he plays 100 games, that dude can hit, you know, upwards of 20 home runs, 15, 18 home runs, I would say, and hit you a good batting average. And they've got Justin Smoke at first base. Like, who is Justin Smoke at this point? So I think if Pierce is healthy, he'll get plenty of at bats while he's healthy. And he's not just a lefty killer anymore. He's been better against righties these past couple years. So I really think that especially if you're in AL only league, I would be all over Steve Pierce there.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, great for deeper leagues. I don't think there's any reason not to roster him in a deeper mixed or an AL only league. I just wish that the Blue Jays would do something crazy and actually give him something close to full-time play. Because like you say, I think the splits really warrant it.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of such leagues, Al, what do you have coming down the pike for expert leagues?
Well, I've got the Tout Wars Mixed Auction in late March. And I'm just trying to think. I mean, I just recently did a Fantasy Pros Industry League. But, you know, the thing is that a bunch of the ones I've done year after year with CBS, now that I'm no longer with them, those are off my calendar now. So I'm actually trying to think about what's left. I've got a score sheet league, the Baseball Prospectus King Score Sheet League. We start a slow draft in that league very shortly, and a Baseball Prospectus Dynasty League. And that draft is coming up very soon. So I've got a few things on tap.
Oh, man, I'm going to just nerd out for a second here. I joined it's on Score Sheet now. It's a salary league. It's actually everything. It really mirrors Major League Baseball. It's so complex it has to be kept on spreadsheets. So, like, nerd factor through the roof. But Score Sheet, oh, my God, is so much fun. I've never done it before. So I urge anybody out there who's never tried it and is listening – it's so great. You draft your team. You get to set your own lineups. You can make your own little platoons and, you know, do your bullpen the way you want it to. If you want to draft Andrew Miller and have him throw 300 innings, go ahead and do that. It's just so much fun. I love it. So do that. But, I mean, that's gonna wrap us up, though, as we go out on my nerd tangent. But so, Al, thanks for joining us, man. Tell us all what you've got coming down the pike these next coming weeks and where everybody can find your work.
Great. Well, thanks for the opportunity to plug a few things. So at FanRag Sports, we're in the midst of our position-by-position fantasy guide. So this week we're breaking down outfielders. And over at FanGraphs, we've got our rankings going up. We're unveiling those position by position, day by day. They're almost all up. Now, at this point, I'll be contributing to the bullpen report over at FanGraphs. And as I think you mentioned at the top, doing a little bit of work in season for MLB.com. And also, I started a blog a few months back, almelchior.com. That's in a dormant state right now, but I'm going to be relaunching that very soon.
A dormant state, just like my love life. What about you, Van? How's your love life?
I don't think dormant state really covers it, to be honest, but you're getting in the right direction anyway.
Okay. What about fantasy writings?
My stuff, by the way, at butuinc.com, which is my website. I also host another podcast called The Backup Catcher. If you like listening to hot garbage for an hour, you might check us out. In fact, we just talked about Jamie Moyer for 20 minutes, so there you go.
Wow, that's topical.
Grandpa Jamie. Oh, yeah. You know, he was really good. If you look at his career, how much war do you think Jamie Moyer accrued in his career?
Oh, war. What is it good for? I have absolutely no idea. That's a tough one. He played so long.
Well, I don't remember exactly, and I'm trying to look it up, but I know it was in the 50s range, which I never, ever, ever would have guessed. He averaged about 2.5 war per season.
That's what I was thinking, probably in that range, just, you know, the sheer volume of innings that he pitched.
He pitched 25 years. That's insane.
And some really good seasons.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Wow. Jamie Moyer, your fact of the day. All right, folks.
I'm sorry. Can I just plug one more thing? Because I was remiss. I'm also doing a live show, a radio show 4 days a week with Fantasy Sports Network.
How could we forget that? Yeah, I actually, when you were plugging everything too, I was going to bring that up, and then it totally fell out of my mind. Because, yeah, it's great. And you can listen to it in podcast form after the fact too, right?
That is correct. Yeah, on demand.
Yeah, which is perfect for me because that's what I do when I deliver the mail. I just walk around all day listening to podcasts. So that's when I can get my owl fix. So with that, like I said before, you can find my work at Fantastics Insider Baseball. Finally, we're getting back up and going again, and I'm actually writing some stuff, and it's a very exciting time. I'm not just doing rankings for this podcast. So, next week, speaking of Fantastics, we're going to bring in our Lord and Savior there, Anthony Perry. We're going to be talking to him. It's going to be a very sabermetric, heavy episode, so, put your thinking caps on. Until then, maybe fantasy gods.